great snake-eyed sawtooth beast we call the animation industry rules over the landscape, just a chopping and a slicing and a deflavorizing all in its path. We pause to remember them more furry independent critters running for their lives in its wake. The ones doing it for the love, trying to make the rent, trying to make the footage count, trying to get bought by Nickelodeon, trying not to get bought by Nickelodeon, as they cross the flaming desert to the temperature control vault where the grapes of wrath are stored. This is their story. These are their words. This is Table 8, and I want my coffee. It's the Animation Show Podcast.
You are listening to the Animation Show Podcast. My name is Taylor Jessen, and I am talking to Jimmy Pickering, who is the illustrator of the fine, fine Animation Show Year 4 poster. And because you are listening to this online, dear listener, please redirect your browser at this time to www.jimmypickering.com, where you will see many, many fine galleries of artwork, which will pose the first question that I'm going to ask Jimmy right now, which is that one sees many similarities between your style and Tim Burton's. But since there was no Tim Burton when you were growing up, one could almost think that Tim Burton at some point decided to be you. But this is not the case, is it? I mean, you were both kind of stewed in the same Disney influences.
I agree. Well, it would be nice to think that he was influenced by me, but I really don't think that's the case. Him and I believe, were probably influenced by the same outside visuals. I believe that he was raised in Southern California, and I was raised there to a certain point, and then my family would go down to California for vacations every year. I think the influences that he had were Disneyland, which was, of course, a huge influence for me, along with certain attractions like Pirates and Haunted Mansion and Small World, and definitely the artist Mary Blair had a big impact on me. Edward Gorey, of course, Dr. Seuss, and all those stop-motion Christmas shows. I think those all stewed together to kind of create my style.
The cute and the creepy are essential ingredients in any good artist these days, I think.
I think so. It really seems to be an interesting trend that's been going on for quite a long time right now. Yeah, I just seem to be fortunate that my interest seems to be a popular thing at the moment right now.
Talk about how you ended up at CalArts, and talk about the rather special trajectory you ended up taking there.
Yeah, well, I was raised in a trailer park, which ought to give a lot of people hope, and when I was in high school, the only thing I was actually good at was drawing. Everything else I really stunk at. So, of course, my interest was drawing, and I wanted to go to art school. So I applied to 3 art schools, and the one that I really wanted to go to was CalArts in Valencia. But I really, really did not think I was going to get accepted. And lo and behold, I was accepted and got into the character animation program.
So you started in traditional animation?
I did. And the first year I was there, I quickly learned that that was really not something that I was interested in. And what I found to be my stronger point was designing the backgrounds and scene layouts and color stylings and art direction. And I was going to leave the school after the first year, but I had a great mentor at that time at the school. His name was Bob Winquist. And he was a production designer from a lot of the old movies in Hollywood. And he saw that potential in me and said that if I did not leave the character animation program, he would help tailor the program for me.
So he helped work up a curriculum that really worked for you.
Yeah, he did. And I still took all of the required character animation classes, but then I also had a whole other set of assignments and private projects that I would do with him and some of the other instructors that were geared towards just that production design and art direction.
How'd you leap from CalArts to Hallmark and Walt Disney Imagineering?
I'll do that as a very short Reader's Digest story, but when I was in college, at the end of every year we would have a student show, and at the year that I was leaving college, Imagineering approached me, and they offered me basically like an internship, a 3-month position. I worked there for 3 months, and I started to do freelance in the animation industry, and I did just what I had gone to school for. I did a lot of layout and background painting and background design. But one of the places that I did a lot of work for was the Don Bluth Studios, and was fortunate enough to meet somebody there named Don Moore, who was a fantastic background painter. And as always happens, I had done this for probably about 6 months, and all of a sudden 3 job offers came up. One was art director position on Batman, the animated series, and another one was a very vague movie, and all I knew about it was that it was a Tim Burton movie based on Halloween theme. That's all they would tell me. They wouldn't let me see any artwork. And then Imagineering also offered me a job. And being that one of my biggest influences was Disneyland, and I kind of got the bug for WDI when I was there at the internship. I ended up taking the Imagineering position. And I really burnt myself out, and that was really mostly of my own doing, because I really enjoyed the job, but I just never allowed myself to have a creative outlet outside of work. So I left Imagineering, and a friend of mine knew some people that worked at Hallmark, and Hallmark ended up hiring me. And I moved from Southern California to Kansas City, Missouri, and worked at Hallmark. And that was really my first exposure to strictly just doing illustration. And I was there for just a little bit shy of 3 years. And I was offered a position at another theme park design company, a smaller one in Los Angeles, that someone I had worked with at WDI was now heading up. And I went back to California and went there as an art director, and then was approached by Universal Studios to become an art director for their core group of designers for their theme park division. And then while I was at Universal was when I started doing books and gallery shows. And then when I left Universal, that's what I ended up doing full-time.
Before we get to the books and other fun things that you did after your career as a designer for attractions, at which point you won several awards, you must tell me about the point in this timeline where you went to a screening of what that mysterious Tim Burton Henry Selick project turned out to be.
I did, yeah. And what was funny was Henry Selick had called me several times when I was trying to decide between those three positions, and he's like, I know I can't tell you much, and I know it's kind of an iffy decision for you to make without being able to see anything, but he was like, it's perfect for you. And of course I just didn't have enough information to make that decision. So when I did go see this movie, which I think is a fantastic movie, Nightmare Before Christmas, I went and saw it, of course, at the El Capitan Theater, and they had lots of little sets and the miniatures and things from it, and it was a great experience and a horrible experience all at the same time. And when I left the theater and I got in the car, and I just cried because it was great to see it, but it was also sad not to be a part of it, because it really was like looking at my sketchbook come to life. And I, after seeing the movie, of course, it was like, oh, now I see why Henry wanted me to come work on that movie. But
to have that thrown at you must have been just a really wrenching thing.
It was interesting. It wasn't a horrible experience. It was just one of those things that was just very emotional, and knowing that I had the chance to work on it and just said no to it, but it was one of those things that just didn't happen.
But meanwhile, at Universal Creative, where you were designing theme park attractions, you won a couple of awards along the way, didn't you?
Yeah, the theme park design business has a fantastic Academy Awards type of ceremony called the THEA Awards, which is the Themed Entertainment Awards. And for 2 years, I was fortunate enough to be the art director on two projects that became best projects of that year. And one was the Men in Black Alien Attack attraction, which is in Florida. And the other was Templo del Fuego, which is in Spain, called PortAventura.
So what was the impetus for you to leave this career you had as an attraction designer, where you were making a great success, and go off on your own?
Well, when I was at Universal, I had just started doing my own artwork and books, and I had just done the book Something Pumpkin, and I just had a gallery show which I put together myself, and it went really well.
Tell me about the process of getting that together and what happened.
Oh, it was an interesting process for me, because I got to the point where I wanted to have a gallery show, and I was doing paintings which are, they're similar to what I do now. I did maybe like 5 or 6 of them, and I was taking them around to different galleries in L.A., and I would show the gallery owners, and they would be really interested in having a show. And then the magic question for them seemed to be, where have you shown before? And when I would say, I haven't, the interest was completely gone. They just wouldn't have a show. A lot of them said, if you end up having a show, let us know, and we'll consider having you. But, we don't want to take that risk right now, because we don't know who your audience is. That didn't happen just once. It probably happened about 6 or 7 times, and I got really frustrated. And one of the people that I worked with at Universal just said, well, why don't you just have a show yourself? And I didn't really think that much about it until I went home and thought, well, why not? Why couldn't I do that? So I assembled a lot of the people that I had worked with, writers, graphic designers, and lighting designers, all these people that I knew that I was using on theme park projects, and asked if they would help me out to kind of put this thing together, and they all were really happy. And the funny thing for me was they said that they would do it for a painting, which cracked me up. I was like, okay, sure, that'd be fantastic. So we put this show together, and I ended up finding a space in North Hollywood, and I rented it from a Thursday to a Monday. And the show was just going to be up for 3 days. It was going to open on a Friday and close on a Sunday.
Okay, so was this like someone's garage? Tell me about where it was.
No. Actually, I looked at a lot of different spaces, and some of them were like people's garages that just wouldn't work. But this was in North Hollywood. And at that time, they had just renovated this building, which looked like, actually, it's very Art Deco. It's a great building, and it's the North Hollywood Center for the Arts. They had just opened, and I told them what I wanted to do, and they were open that weekend, meaning their schedule was open. They had nothing planned in there, and so they rented me the space. And fortunately, it was not that far away from Universal. The great thing about working at Universal, too, was I had made a lot of friends with a lot of the support people for different areas of the studio. And I knew it would be unethical to say, hey, can you give me some addresses from your Rolodex?
Mm-hmm.
But I took some of these people like stacks of these invites and said, they're stamped, they're all ready to go. If you could just put some addresses on here, which I don't have to see, and send them to people who you think it would be good for them to see this show, would you do that? And they did. It
Beautiful.
Was great. So the show opened on Friday, and it was packed. It actually was really scary because I had never had a show before. So I was like, oh my God, who are all these people? And there were a lot of well-known people there, which just really freaked me out. And I just wasn't ready for that, you know, but it was a great thing to have happen for the first show. And the show sold out that night. It sold out on Friday. So it was open all weekend, but there was nothing left for people to buy.
Hope everybody's paying attention. Can't get a gallery opening? Make your own.
Absolutely. And, you know, now I think back about it, and I'm thinking, wow, that was kind of a crazy thing to do. But my comment to anybody out there who's are having a hard time to have a show, and it's now the seed is being planted in their head, it's like, if I could do it, you could do it. So, you know, you might not have access to some of those Rolodex, but it doesn't matter. Just do it. It really was a great experience.
And I guess the itch must have stayed with you, because not only have you continued to do a lot of gallery shows, you actually owned a gallery at one point, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I did own a gallery. After I left Universal, which I never told you how I left it, but once I left Universal and I moved up to Oregon, I just love artwork. I love artwork, and I had met so many people who were doing artwork on the side and just had no venue to show it. So I decided that I'd open a gallery, so I did. And it really did well, but I just got to a point where I was doing so many books and so many shows of my own that I just didn't have time to do the gallery as well, so I ended up selling the gallery.
On your books, you've got a really nice selection, which all of our listeners can go and check out by going to the popular bookseller site with the name of The Famous River. But there's a really nice series of books you've done for Smallfellow Press, which I have to say was founded by Larry Sloan and Leonard Stern, and I grew up loving their series of books on Price, Stern, Sloan, including You Were Born on a Rotten Day and the Elephant Joke book. So props to you there for hooking up with them.
And don't forget Mad Libs.
Oh, yes.
I mean, everybody loved Mad Libs. I think they still do love them. Kids still love those. They think they're great.
They've got inches of space in every good bookshelf in this world. So you have a nice four-book sequence. It's spring, it's summer, it's fall, and it's winter, some season books,
yeah,
which you wrote and illustrated.
Yeah, and that was an interesting situation with them. I mean, it was great. The first book that I did with them was Something Pumpkin, and it was with a coworker of mine from Imagineering. His name is Scott Allen, and we came up with the concept for the book and did a mock-up, and we showed it to Larry and Leonard, and they really liked it. And then the next books, the season books, originally I was not going to write those, and we were having some difficulty with the manuscript, and they convinced me to take a pass at just writing it myself. I personally think I stink as a writer. I have really bad dyslexia, and one of the problems that I have is that I have an inability to retain mathematical formulas or writing formulas. I know it sounds bizarre, but it's true. And so sentence structure and rhyming and all that kind of stuff for me is just something I'm not very secure with.
Hmm.
So Larry and Leonard were actually really great, and you know, I wrote the manuscript, and as it happens with everybody, it starts getting edited, but they were really fantastic in helping me, because I said, whenever you change anything, please just let me know why you're changing it, the process of changing it, and all that kind of stuff. So they really took a lot of time and educated me in how verse works and how rhyming works and all that kind of stuff. And we really worked together to fine-tune those, and it was a good experience.
You have a picture book, another one which you wrote and illustrated, your latest, Skelly the Skeleton Girl. That's for Simon & Schuster, isn't it?
Yeah, and that book, the success of it has really surprised me. That's a book that actually started from a painting of a show that I did, the character Skelly. I mean, it was just a painting of that character. She just cracked me up. Every time I'd look at her, I thought she was funny, and she just had some kind of story to tell. But the book came out, and it did really well. What's funny is Simon & Schuster planned it as a Halloween-only book, and it was originally supposed to just be a soft cover and just a very small run, because Halloween is like the worst holiday for book sales, which, you know, unfortunately is my favorite holiday. So it started out as a soft cover book, and then as I started designing it and sending in the sketches, I got a call from the art director I was working with, and she said, you're going to be really excited because marketing, who never wants to do anything, wants to make it a hardcover book. And then the next step was, once more stuff started coming in, they decided they wanted to do it a hardcover with a paper wraparound sleeve, which is even better. And then she called me again. She goes, you're not going to believe it. It's like charm. She goes, now they're wanting to do, you know, spot varnish on your cover, which was a shock.
Man, the production values just kept climbing up the ladder,
I
man.
Know. It was crazy. So when the book finally came out, it was really, I was really excited about just the way it looked, because, again, when I first started, I thought it was just going to be a little paperback. But it did so well that it sold out its first press run in the first week, which they were totally shocked. And so they had to immediately, you know, do another press run. And it's been selling pretty steadily since it first came out. Right now, that's actually what I'm working on, is the second Skelly book.
Very cool. These are beautiful little artifacts, both the books and the paintings. And I must say that the painting upon which the animation show Year 4 poster is based is a number 20 in a series you did called Wicked Little Things. And these are lovely to me, not just because of the content, but because of the format. They're 5x5, and they were all painted on wood. Is that right?
Yeah. The whole show, there were 30 pieces, like you said, and each piece, the title was just the number. They were on 5x5 clay boards. Basically, they are just 5x5 squares. They're 2-inch cradled, so they kind of look like a box when you hang them on the wall. But the clay board is actually, on the surface that you paint, has a real thin layer of clay. And it's an amazing surface to paint on. I used to paint on, you know, like acid-free illustration board. And then I saw these at an art store, and I fell in love with it. And I have not stopped painting on clay boards since.
And you're in oil, right? How does it take the oil? Does it feel good?
Yeah, it does. In fact, the illustration board I used it all the time because I thought, oh, you know, I didn't like the way canvas interacted with the way that I painted. And I thought, I'll never find another surface. But when I found the clay board, it's like it was meant to be. They just love each other. It's great.
You live on or near the Oregon coast. Tell me about how, if in any way, this has affected your ability to find and interact with new clients.
Well, I live in Seaside, you're right, and it is on the coast of Oregon. It's like if you look on the map of Oregon at the very, very northwest corner of the state, that's where I'm at. And I was a little apprehensive of moving because I was moving from Los Angeles, and I had a conversation with my agent, and I asked them, are there any places I should not move? Because I told them I was thinking of moving to a real small town, and their only comment to me was, if you have internet connection, you have UPS and FedEx and a post office, you could work anywhere. And I was still a little apprehensive about it, but they were right. I have been here now probably for about 6 years, and I have had more work since I've moved than I did when I was in Los Angeles. It's great. I mean, with the magic of the internet and email and the ability to send sketches so quickly back and forth to New York, it's quite amazing. Because most of the publishers I work with are in New York.
I don't want to ask you to explain your work at all, but we love the mood of the poster based on number 20. Beastie number 20 is a machine of some sort, which is giving off a real interesting corporate vibe in the fact that it's doing evil things, but has a wonderful, cute affect to it. It is happy. It is very, very happy in its work, which is not helping our landscape at all.
No.
What kind of things did you... Did this come out of a dream or out of a doodle?
Well, with the original painting came from, there's a highway that I have to take to go to the city, which is Portland. The big city from where I live is Portland. And the highway is Highway 26. And it's really a beautiful drive, especially after you move from LA where, you know, there's just buildings everywhere. But it goes over a mountain range, and it's forest and green and beautiful. But one of the things that I found extremely heart-wrenching was I would drive over the pass one time, and it would just be beautiful. And 2 weeks later, I'd drive over the pass again, and there would be huge sections of the forest just completely gone that were there 2 weeks prior. Just, you know, mountains covered with dirt and stumps where there used to be trees. And it was the weirdest thing to me. I just had this vision in my mind of what's doing this? Because every time I would drive through this pass, there would be more forest gone and more forest gone, but there would be no sign of what was doing it. And so that's where that idea came from. There must be this big machine. In my brain, of course, I'm thinking, yeah, there must be some big machine that comes out at night and chops down all the trees and nobody ever gets to see it. And ironically, in that painting, the whole world is brown and the only thing that's left that's green is the machines. So that was the idea, and it translated really well into the animation show poster.
Hey, environmental destruction is good for jobs. ruining this planet is going to put a lot of people to work.
Oh, yeah, it will.
I read that somewhere.
I guess every bad thing has a silver lining somewhere. So.
Yes, which evaporates.
Yeah, but that take of that painting was actually a good translation for the animation show poster, because my own perspective when I was designing that was, you know, having studied character animations, that this new version, the meaning for me is a bit different than what the original number 20 painting was, that this big machine kind of represented what I would call corporate animation, stamping out the amateur animator. But in my mind, I thought it was very different than, you know, the tragedy of deforestation, because at this point, independent filmmakers, animators or otherwise, have a means to get their films into the public's eye via the internet, which is something we've never had before. So it kind of takes this idea of corporate animation being the only way to get an animated film done and kind of flip-flops it. It's no longer the only way to see a film. And I think in the next few years, it's going to be really interesting to see how the dynamic of film production is changed by that ability.
I do, too. It's completely unstoppable, this independent animation machine. A thing can become a hit instantly with just a couple of bloggers paying attention. Suddenly, millions of people are exposed to your work.
And I think that's amazing. It's like it's the first time that's really been able to happen, animation especially, because, you know, there's only been a limited amount of studios that actually proceed with a major film in that type of filmmaking. So it's really interesting to watch this dynamic change.
Well, thank you so much for the background on what you've been doing and the background on your arc as an artist coming up and doing things, because I think that's going to be inspirational to people as well, just figuring out that, hey, there's more than one way of doing this thing we call the artistic life, which is the point of the Animation Show podcast, to which you have just finished listening, dear listener. And again, my name is Taylor Jessen. I've been talking to Jimmy Pickering, illustrator and creator of the design for the Animation Show Year 4 poster. Thank you very much for talking to me, Jimmy.
Thank you, Taylor. And I just want to say thank you for everybody listening. And I hope I have inspired some people. That's great. Fantastic if I was able to do that. And also, I should say, thank you to the Animation Show for allowing me to do the poster. It was great fun.